Well, good morning. I want to welcome you to our final installment of God Honoring Entertainment Choices. Do want to encourage you to pick up notes that are in the back if you want. You will probably want those. If you did miss a session in the weeks leading up to this morning, we are posting our notes as well as a brief summary of the slides in a PDF format online at the church website, so you're welcome to avail yourself of those. I want to begin this morning by reading a passage out of Ephesians chapter 5. We've referenced verses out of this section of Ephesians numerous times during our study because I think it just has a lot of substance toward the topic that we're looking at. But I want this to be kind of our final passage to have in front of us as we go into this morning. So Ephesians chapter 5, a couple verses starting at verse 3, and then I'll skip down to verse 7. But sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. And then verse 7, therefore, do not become partners with them. For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So with that before us, I'm going to take a minute to pray for us. Oh, Father, I'm just grateful once again for your words to us, that you don't just leave us stumbling around in the dark trying to figure this all out on our own, but you give us clear words and good words and powerful words that will set us on a course to live lives that are worthy and proper for those that you have set apart as your holy ones. So I pray this morning once again, Father, would you move among us? Would you shape our hearts into the image of our great Redeemer, Jesus? Would you cause us to be light among one another, but more importantly, in our community, in our workplaces, in our homes? Would you give us the courage and the resolve to expose the darkness as we walk in the light? Would you cause us to love what is good and beautiful and true, and to hate all that is evil, that has corrupted your creation, that robs people of the joy and the peace that you have for them when they walk in holiness? We pray these things now in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen. Well, it is our final week together, and as I was looking at how I wanted to wrap up, just noted down a number of things that we weren't able to cover in this class that would have been good, but we're just not going to get there. We really didn't talk about the ethics, not just of those who watch entertainment produced, but of those who are producing it. So if you're an actor and you're involved in some sex scenes or violent scenes or whatever, what does that mean? And then as an extension of that, what does it mean that we're financially supporting that industry? So Netflix, as an example, a majority of their original content that they're putting out has some kind of sexually explicit content in it. And so if as a company, that is really their slant, are we supporting that or not? And are we willing to? So those are some questions we really didn't ask or talk about much, but I think they're worth our consideration. We didn't really talk about, is there a difference between watching sinful acts and engaging as the agent of those sinful acts, say, in a video game? So is there something different about watching someone murdered versus being the agent of that murder in a video game or the agent of that sexual engagement in a video game? So that's something I think that is worth looking at. The implications of explicit AI-generated content, we didn't really look at that, but this is the direction where it's going, where AI-generated girlfriends, you can go online and they'll hook you in, and the more you're willing to pay or engage with them, the more explicit they'll do, and they, because it's algorithm-based, they know just what you like and how you like and how to hook you in, so that men and also women are going to be drawn into relationships with this AI-generated character and content that in some ways is going to be more real, more engaging, more preferable in one sense to actual human relationships. So that's going to be huge. That's happening right now. You could go online and hook up with a virtual date. And I'm not encouraging you to do that, but it's an issue that's in front of us. We didn't really talk about the sports entertainment complex and all that's involved in that and the celebrity culture that is part of our entertainment environment here in America and beyond. We didn't talk about the music industry, secular versus sacred, and what do we do about that, and the power of music and lyrics and how that's working. So that's another whole arena that I think is worthy of our attention. And then just a couple others. We didn't really talk about much anyway, the impact of sort of short form modern entertainment that is flipping from one scene to the next. I mean, it's rarely that you'll watch a movie or a music video that has more than a 1 second or 2 second scene without switching scenes. And so this is kind of what it looks like all the time in front of our screens, whatever we're engaged in, just a switch, switch, switch. And so what does that do to our attention spans and our ability to focus and think critically about stuff as opposed to just having things fly through us all the time? So we didn't talk about that much, but it's worth considering what is happening to our minds and how that even potentially impacts our ability to think about high and holy things with a reference to God and to love God as an outgrowth of how we think about God. And then finally, we didn't talk much, but I do think it's important for our immediate context of what is the influence of the news sources that we're listening to online, many of them Facebook or YouTube, whatever, and the character of the discourse. So whether you're in a conservative camp or a liberal camp, how they talk about the other side, the caricatures, the language, the name calling, you know, how is that impact in the way we think about engaging with others who have different ideas than ourselves and what's appropriate and is it God honoring? You know, would Jesus talk the way those people talk? Would Jesus talk the way we talk as we engage with different perspectives? So I think in our current polarized political environment, we have to be aware that we're influenced by that our culture. So those are all things that we could probably spend several more weeks on, but we're not going to. Maybe you'll one of those got your attention and you'd like to pursue it further on your own. But for this morning, we're really going to focus on entertainment choices toolbox. So I have three objectives. I want to review one piece that we didn't. Well, first, I want to review just quickly what we covered last week. And then there's one piece that we didn't get to that I want to go ahead and look at, and that is to contemplate if and why it's sinful to watch sin on screen. So we'll do that. And then finally, I want to explore the value of various entertainment tool sets that are available to us. So that's kind of where I'm hoping to go this morning. So just a quick review of last week. So you remember we put this graph that represents an 18-year-old's life. For some of us, there are many fewer dots on their left, but it was just the idea of how much of our free time is involved in screen time, and therefore, if that's true, how much is that time worth? So we looked about what's the return on the investment of our time, and the more your time is worth, the greater the return on that investment should be. So we kind of looked at it from that angle. And then finally, we talked about opportunity cost. So there's a trade-off. Every time you make a decision to invest your time in one thing, whether it's Facebook or a YouTube video or watching a movie, it's a choice to not do something else, right? And so what are the opportunity costs? What are you losing or foregoing in order to engage in a particular form of entertainment? And is it worth that opportunity cost? So those were some of the questions that we asked. And then we looked at, when and what explicit material is improper. So we looked at some biblical passages that are fairly explicit in things that they describe. We spent some time looking at the different Motion Pictures Association ratings of movies and what content is or isn't allowed. And we discovered that almost all ratings other than G, most content is allowed in some shape or form. It's more about the extent, how brief it is, and how extensive, how much it shows. But it's there in various forms in almost all of them. And we looked at a document that says that the Motion Picture Association bases their ratings on what they perceive to be the majority perspective of parents in America. And so we essentially said it's problematic if we, who are called to be set apart from and think differently from the majority of the world, it's problematic if we base our entertainment choices simply on a rating system that's based on the majority of how Americans feel about it, right? So that's kind of where we got with that. And so then we kind of did a thought experiment. If someone were to ask you, why is it wrong in public, not on a screen, but in public, for someone to go about in the nude or to engage in a sexual act, why would that be wrong? What answers that are biblically aligned would you be able to offer? And so we talked a little bit about God's design for sex, God's design for the body, and God's design for clothing. And all of those have significance and provide us with substantive reasons for why those things are inappropriate in a public space, right? And so I assumed, which I think most of us would assume, that if that is true, then if something like that, if someone were nude on the beach at Whiskeytown Lake or engaged in an explicit sexual act, we wouldn't all gather around in a circle and watch that, right? I hope. Okay, so if that's true, then the next question is, why then would we gather around a circle and watch that on a screen? Okay, and so then we looked at, well, we have some rationale for why we might be willing to do that, and I'm not going to go through all of those right now, but we need to ask the question and be honest, are those valid rationale or not? When are they valid? When are they not valid? And So that's kind of where we left things last week. And so just one more piece to that. as we contemplate if and why it's sinful to watch sin on a screen. Pastor John Piper gets people that write in and ask him to address certain questions. And so a son writes in about a disagreement that he has with a father, and that disagreement is with regard to whether you should watch a movie where God's name is used in vain. Okay, so both of them agree that as an individual you shouldn't use God's name in vain. The question is it sinful to watch it when someone else is doing it? Okay, so how would you respond to the question of this son who has a disagreement? The father says, no, you shouldn't watch it. The son says, well, I don't think it's necessarily sinful just to hear someone using God's name in vain in a movie. Well, how would you respond to that?
It's not necessarily all about this, but more like into the gaming. When you're playing a first shooter game or something like that, and you pull the trigger to kill somebody on the screen, it makes it more likely that you might be able to do it in real life because you don't feel the repercussions of it. The same for this. I've seen little boys, little girls that use language that they hear from their parents. They're only parroting it,
okay,
but they've heard it. Now they use it.
Okay.
And you, even sitting as an adult, hear it from someone else, and you begin to incorporate it on how you think of other people in those terms as well.
Okay. So Aaron's comment, for those of you who might not have heard, was that one of the factors we have to consider on whether it's appropriate or not is what is the likelihood that by watching this, we or others that are entrusted to our care are likely to employ that same language. So what's the influence of seeing something to how we actually conduct ourselves? Good. Any other answers? Yeah.
Also, like if you're at the movie or watching it on TV, you're giving them ratings. So you're adding to the number of people that like it or support it by default. Even if you didn't know what was said, you know, when you started watching it, they have a viewer. So if you don't turn it off right away, they have a viewer.
Okay.
You know, their numbers go up, so therefore it's accepted, it's okay.
So by your willingness to continue to consume that content that has sinful acts, in some way you're lending support and credence to that an entertainment that includes that kind of content. Okay? So again, we're thinking, what are we going to tell this son who has a disagreement with his father? This is how you should think about this. Any other thoughts?
Well, it talks about Price was asked about whether murder was okay. It wasn't just the murder, it was even thinking about the murder. You've already committed it. In the same way, using or seeing a sinful act and seeing those done, you're thinking about those things, so it becomes sinful because you're just thinking about it.
Okay, so there is the biblical notion that it's not just carrying out an act physically that makes it a sinful thing, but if you are entertaining those thoughts and attitudes of hate toward another individual, even if you don't strike them with something, strike them down, that doesn't mean you're excused just for what you do physically if your heart is not in the right place. Okay. I've included in your notes an excerpt from Pastor John's response to that question. And so as I read through this, I want you to underline what John says is the main issue in this question that's being asked, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more. So, John says, the short answer to the question is that it is not a sin to hear God's name taken in vain. God hears it a billion times a day, right? Okay? So, God never has sinned, but he knows that right now, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, maybe more, are using God's name in vain, okay? So that's the first premise. It's not sin just to hear it, because God hears it. He hears the most outrageous, gross, unjust, wicked, defiled. He sees them all, and God never sins in seeing them. That's not the issue. It's just not the issue if it goes into your ears, right? We're all in context where we're hearing people cuss and take the Lord's name in vain and whatnot. So that's not the main issue, he says. The enjoyment of being entertained by sin is the issue. I'll say it again. The enjoyment of being entertained by sin is the issue. Whether it's a sin of taking the Lord's name in vain or the sin of cocky, self-exalting arrogance, which seems to permeate everything, or the sin of lust and fornication and adultery and indecency and immodesty, which is virtually ubiquitous, or the sin of distortions of womanhood and manhood, or the sins of disrespecting parents, or the sins of drunkenness, or the sins of desiring to be rich, which Paul said we ought not to do, or the sins of dishonesty, or the sins of slandering with stereotypes, or the sins of simply, profoundly, ubiquitously ignoring and thus not glorifying or thanking God. Whatever the sins, the issue is, what does it say about our souls that we enjoy being entertained by them? Right? So what's the issue? What makes our hearing of God's name taken in vain and a litany of other sins that we might see on the screen, what makes that problematic? If you enjoy it. Right? So that's a hard question we all really have to ask ourselves. Is not simply, am I hearing this and in revulsion and disgust saying, this is wrong, this is improper, this is wicked, this is evil, this is out of alignment with how things should be. If I'm laughing, if I'm entertained by that, caught up in it, passively just okay with all of it. What does that say about the state of my soul that I don't just see it and hear it, but I like it? And so he follows up with this, sort of anticipating the response. Well, if you say, well, I'm not being entertained by them, by those things, I'm not enjoying being entertained by the sins in the story, they grieve me. I'm being entertained by other aspects of truth or excellence in the story and the way the story is presented. I can see myself saying that, okay? Those are words I would use, okay? I would say, John replies, well, I'm certainly glad about that. And then I would say, you are an amazing person with capacities for purity and holiness far greater than mine. If you can over and over again be entertained in your relaxed, amused, pleased state by the enacting of sins that are not treated as sins, they're glorified. They're not treated as sins in the shows, but as acceptable and often preferable to righteousness. If you can watch all that while not being defiled or shaped by those sins, you are an amazing person. I could wish for such holiness. And he concludes, but for most of us, it's not going to work like that. And so I'm asking you to try and give an honest assessment of what's going on, what you're deriving pleasure from as you're watching these things. Now, I've watched some movies and some content with stuff that is not good. And if it's being portrayed as evil, then I'm like, yeah, that's evil, and it should be shown as evil, right? But if I am caught up in the flirtatious, promiscuous, immodest flirting of a young woman with a married man in a Hallmark movie, or it wouldn't be Hallmark probably if it was married, but it's in other movies, I can tell you. If I like that, if I'm caught up in the feeling of that, in some ways okay with that, taking pleasure in that, what's that say about my heart? So, just want to encourage us to think about the enjoyment of these sins is what we should really be keyed into. Yeah, Des.
I was thinking too, like, when I hear people say the Lord's name in vain, I flinch. Like, I literally flinch on the inside, you know? And if I keep watching something like that over and over and over and over, it's going to get to the point where I'm not flinching anymore. I've just been sort of desensitized to it.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be really careful of that with all of these things.
Yeah.
We can't just self-justify it inside and get desensitized to things over time.
Sure.
It's kind of like, well, just why? I mean, there's other things that are better.
Yeah. So repeated exposure can desensitize our hearts and our loves to these kinds of things. Now, to sort of put this in context, it is not my hope necessarily that, let's say, if you're in a construction trade or you work with people that use profanity a lot in their everyday language. My hope is that I could love those individuals without being taken aback every time something comes off their lips, which I would just live on the floor with some of the people I know, right? So I think there's a way that we can love the foul-mouthed and the sinful, the adulterers, the immoral, the immodest, while not still loving some of the things that they are exhibiting or some of their behaviors, okay? So we need to think well about that, but I do nonetheless agree that there can be a desensitizing of, if you're just hearing it all the time, then you stop thinking, oh, this is not right. This is evil. This is not God's intention for humans and how they relate to one another. So, okay, well, let's move on. So this week, I really want to focus our time on exploring the value of various entertainment tool sets. So in your notes, I have several categories that I want us to look at. And I haven't found a way to make it so you can just click on those links that are in your notes and the open web page. So I did, and we do put these notes up online, but if you know what a QR code is and you wanted to, like, open your phone, you could bring those notes up and you could actually click on the links as we go through some of this. I'm not going to like be clicking through all of these online resources and go over exhaustive, but want to cover some general categories and then hopefully also get some input from you all on what you found helpful. I do just want to say I appreciate a number of you reached out to me and gave me, you know, some input on, hey, I've used this platform or I've done this and it's been helpful to me, and some of that I've been able to incorporate in our notes this morning. So I see some phones. Can anybody confirm that the QR code is actually working? Did it work? Yeah, okay, got one thumbs up. So, yeah, or you can type in the bit.ly Entertainment Lesson 5 link, and that'll get you there, too. So with that said, let's just look at some different tool sets that are available to us. And the first category that I have here is content review tools. So these are typically websites where someone has taken the time to review a movie, often movie, but it might be other things, and take notes on what kinds of content is included in that movie, and then give that in a summary form, and in some cases, specific instances of profanity or nudity or sex or violence and the intensity of those, so that you get an idea of whether that movie is going to be serving up content that you're comfortable viewing or not, okay? And so some typical ones are the Plugged In website in association with Focus on the Family. A couple others, Movie Guide is one that, as I understand, is from a more conservative Christian perspective. Common Sense Media is also one. I think it was Des mentioned to me that the IMDb, which I believe stands for Internet, now I forgot it, movie database, yeah. Internet movie database. And there are some others. Kids in Mind is another one that's more geared to what might be appropriate for kids. There's another site, screenit.com. So in any case, these are all geared to helping you, before you watch something, have an idea of what's in it and whether it be appropriate to you. So give me a sense. Are you guys using sites like these? Which ones do you use? Do you have a preference? Which one would be, you know, in your estimation, offer something better than the other? Any input? Yeah?
I looked at Plugged In and IMDb, and Plugged In isn't as specific, I think.
Yeah.
Sometimes as IMDb, and it is, they'll say, like, there is some immodest clothing, whereas IMDb will go more into exactly what kind of immodesty the clothing is.
Yeah.
So
okay.
If you just want something more general and more Christian-focused, Plugged In is more of that. And IMDb isn't Christian at all,
yeah.
But sometimes is much more, gives you a better idea of what is
great,
there.
Great, yeah. So, so Plugged In tends to give, in paragraph form, different types of content that might be objectionable. It's a summary, and then they do give it kind of a rating, whereas the IMDb website provides, I think, specific numbers of instances of these kinds of things, and even common users and reviewers can add in their notes or affirm, yeah, this is true or not. So just a little more specificity in that review site. Anything else or any others that you access that we haven't looked at? Okay. So again, this is meant to be a tool to help you be able to evaluate a movie or other entertainment type as to whether it's appropriate for you or your family. All right, let's. There's another category that's similar, but it's not actually the same. And so these are our content filter tools. And so there's a couple of ones, VidAngel and ClearPlay, which they take a movie that's being streamed from a secular source, say Prime Video or Netflix, HBO, some of them do, and then they apply sort of a software-generated means of either muting the sound or skipping through scenes so that you can delete out some of the content that you wouldn't want to actually see. So years ago, when DVDs were still a thing, we had a ClearPlay deck. Okay, so we purchased this piece of hardware that then you could put a thumb drive in that had all of the movie-specific profiles that then you could choose, okay, what would you allow or not allow? And it was pretty granular in what you could allow, and that would let us watch some movies that had maybe a few instances of something in it that we didn't want to, but we could watch it. So that's one approach. And then another one is that there are some that don't actually filter, but they filter in terms of what they make available on their website for streaming. Okay, and so an example of that would be PureFlix. I think now it's Great American, PureFlix.com. Christian Cinema is another one. Christian Cinema also specifically can give you a license for a public showing in your church. So that's something that they do that's a little bit unique. Anyone here use or have used a service similar to this? Yeah?
The one that we offer from our church here, what's it called?
Right Now Media?
Right Now Media.
Yeah.
I can't believe how much is on there. And so Carol and I have started to just, if we have some time or we want to chill, go to Right Now Media and just kind of search for something to look at, and we always find something.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, the church has purchased a a subscription that is accessible to everyone that is part of our church to access Right Now Media. Ryan could give you more information on that. And they have a ton of stuff on there. It tends to be more spiritual development, growth-oriented stuff. So to my knowledge, there's not, like, you're not going to go find a secular movie or even probably a faith-based movie. That's not what it's about. But it does have a ton of great resources available. Yeah. Anyone else?
We subscribe to Answers in Genesis movie.
You subscribe to what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Answers in Genesis? Okay. Yeah?
They have a streaming thing that has, like, Christian comedians and other stuff, and they have a few movies. They're all creation-based or faith-based.
Okay. So, Answers in Genesis, I think is what you said, serves up some content, some comedy, some other stuff, but from a creationist, or I would assume a young earth creationist perspective, but I'm not positive. There are a lot of sites that serve up good Christian content that you can go to. There are more limited sites that serve up faith-based, or if not faith-based, at least movies that most of us would deem as clean because they don't have objectionable content in them, right? Okay, let's look at the next category. This is probably a big deal for all of us who have younger or teenage kids in our current context, so parental oversight tools. And these can function sort of at a couple of different levels. I'm not an iPhone or an Apple person, so I don't really know how that ecosystem works, but I think Melanie Peebles told me that they've been able to use that and others too. And Android has a similar parental controls thing. I've included some links there to describe it. But basically, they typically allow you at a device level to set screen and application time limits. You can do often a remote device lock. You can block certain apps and websites and filter content. You can disable the camera or the mic or other functions on the phone. So if you have a young kid and you don't want them taking pictures, if they're invited to take a picture and send it to someone or whatever, then you can disable some of those functions on a phone. And then often they'll include some mechanisms for showing the location of that device, which is usually on the person, right? So if you want to know where your kid is or know that they're not going in a place that you told them they shouldn't be, then these provide some means of doing that. So has anyone used it at that level? Use the iPhone, parental control, okay, see a number of you, or Android? Any Android folks? We have a few of you also. Okay, good. And then there are some that are not a device or ecosystem dependent, but they're sort of add-on software-based parental controls. I've listed a number of them there. Now, I wasn't aware. I guess it's been a while since our kids were sort of in the teenage, we were monitoring their social media, and so most of these are probably newer or are new to the scene since we were engaged in that, but of that list that's there, I assume that's pronounced Custodio. There's Kaspersky Safe Kids, NetNanny. Bark is a new one, newer, and it has much more AI-driven, intuitive monitoring of things. So, so it's kind of moving up in the ranks. Norton Family, if you're a Norton internet security person, then there's a Norton Family module that can be incorporated into that. Anyone use any of those or some other kind of social media monitoring, tracking? Yeah? Rabbit ears? Okay, so you mean like the physical thing on the TV, or is it an actual program?
I use it. I have not yet had to change the channel.
Oh, okay.
And it was a blessing because there is just tons of good stuff on there. We got rid of cable a couple, 3 years ago.
Okay.
Rabbit ears.
Okay. So one physical means is to just, you know, only have access to something that's being broadcast, which would limit things. Yeah?
One option for kids with cell phones is the Gab phone.
The Gab or Gab?
Gab, G-A-B-B.
Oh, okay.
Because they can't get on the internet. It's only for calling, texting.
Okay. So you could get a phone that's not internet connected. It just allows texting and
calls.
And calls.
Also, we use the Gap phone. It also allows a lot of different education apps. So like for kids that need to access like Canvas and things like that for school or
okay.
high school. Or, so there's tons of apps that are available, but not like social media, not web
okay.
browsers.
So it must allow some internet connectivity, but it's restricted to approved apps of some kind then, I would assume. Yeah?
Yeah, we have the Bark phone, which is the newer AI.
Oh, okay. So is it actually a device, or is it the software on it?
They now have a Bark phone. It's just a Samsung Galaxy, but it's preloaded with their operating system.
Oh, okay.
So it is pretty amazing. I mean, we've been struggling with trying to introduce phones to, like, our 7th grader.
Yeah.
And 8th grade, 9th grade, and it has monitoring, and the parental app's amazing, where it monitors every text they send. It's just texting and calling too, but even when they say things that are pretty, I wouldn't envision it being a harsh or bad thing. It'll alert you to say they're bullying someone if they just say like the slightest negative word, and it just alerts your phone, tells you where they're at.
Yeah.
Charlotte's
her knee was hurting, and I think Jeremy said take some Advil, and it alerted me that Charlotte was talking about illicit
taking
substances.
Some, right.
You know,
okay.
I was like, okay.
Okay.
It's,
yeah.
It's
good.
Watching.
So So Bark is a platform. Because it uses AI, it's working to be context sensitive. So one example they give is say your kid gets sends a text that says this homework assignment is killing me. That wouldn't necessarily be flagged, but if they get a message that says, their friend says, I've got a gun and thinking about killing someone, it will flag that. So it's able to be context sensitive and give notifications to parents to help them be aware of what's happening.
And it errs on the conservative side, so...
You probably get more notices than what you might want, right?
I mean, no surprise, my kids are little sinful people, right? So Charlotte and Ryder, they were texting each other, and they said something like "shut up" to one another, and that flagged as like bullying. And then I went and told them, you know, I knew what they were texting each other. Like, I wasn't doing anything, Dad. It's like, well, you said this. You know, there's a lot worse things they could say, but it flags even that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. One other thing I'll throw in here, even though it comes up lower in my notes, is Melanie Peebles mentioned that they're aware of a social media app that's called Locket. Originally was published on iPhone. I think they've just come out with an Android version. But basically, what it lets a user do is have a very limited set of friends, either 5 or 20, I think you can set it, but it's very limited. And you can take a picture and send it to your friends, but no one else can see it except for those friends, and you don't have any outside feeds coming into that. So it eliminates the, unless your child specifically brings in a person as their friend, it eliminates or it screens out those who are just kind of online predatoring, trying to connect and do things. You can't send pictures to them. You can't receive all of those outside feeds or those ad feeds that are coming all the time. So that's a very, it allows a kid to have some interaction with their group of friends, share things that they're doing, as most kids are doing that today, but it kind of puts a barrier around that. And so many families find that as helpful. Yeah.
I just wanted to add that this is important for adults, like what you watch on TV and what you stream and all those kind of things. But when it comes to kids, it's like ultra important. Because as a counselor and as somebody who's worked with kids, it is literally killing our young people. And I mean literally, not funny literally, but literally.
Yeah.
But the messages that they're getting and the things that they're looking at that we don't know they're looking at, it is just rampant. And the number of kids that are depressed and anxiety and are on medication, in part is because of all this.
Yeah. So Lynn's comment there is that this is just really, really important. Because all of our kids, even if you haven't given them a phone, they have friends and peers that have these things. And so you can't put a foolproof barrier around them, but we as parents and those who are entrusted with the care of our kids, we've got to have this on our radar, and we've got to be proactive with it. We can't afford to just passively let our kids navigate this on their own. So I'll come back to you, Ryan. But Don, I think I said I was going to come back to you, and then I just forgot. Sorry about that. So you had a comment.
Two.
Now you've got two. I let it percolate, so now they've given birth. Now we've got.
One was that we have a subscription to PureFlix. It's not perfect, but it has a lot of Christian content,
okay.
Christian-based content, wide variety of content, from VeggieTales to
okay.
And some original content. We think it's worth it.
Yeah, it's like $10 a month, isn't it? PureFlix subscription.
Yeah, of course we have to access it through our Amazon Fire Stick.
Okay, great. which you get to pay for as well.
Okay. Somebody bought it for us.
Yeah. Okay.
And the other thing is that you can't assume that all of these things are going to protect your kid from bad content. They are way better than you at disarming stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And so I think you need to be aware. And also, you already mentioned that they have friends who have phones.
Yeah, yeah, okay, good, thanks. So Don's comment was that they have a subscription to PureFlix and find that there's a lot of good content that they're able to access by that. It does come with a monthly fee, but it's been worthwhile. And secondly, he said that you can't just be passive and, you know, install an app and hope that that's going to do your work for you as a parent. You've got to be more engaged with your kids than that. So I think, no, she's good. So Ryan.
I just like Don's second comment.
Okay. So Ryan wants to reiterate that parents and caregivers, we got to step up here. The implications are too great for us to ignore this. Even though for some of us, you know, we're not in that digital ecosphere, it may feel foreign and we're overwhelmed, we don't know what it's like. Get some help, reach out to some people who know that better, get some things set up, and it'll be helpful for your kids and for your family as a whole. So a couple others. Well, let me back up. In terms of parental controls, I didn't mention, so game consoles also have parental controls on them, so that's something, if you're not aware, it's worth setting up, can limit whether new games can be downloaded, how much time can be spent on a particular game. Some of them allow that to happen at a user level, so you can distinguish between different kids and what kind of explicit content is able to be seen, and even if in-game purchases are allowed or not allowed, so that kind of console-based parental control is in place. Yeah?
I had a quick question about, they got three kids, and they're all teenagers now, and they used to come to this church, and now their mother's drug them away, and she just lets them do whatever they want, you know? And they have no filter. They have all three phones. It happens since they were really young.
Yeah.
They had these phones, and they're caught. They're going to be coming over to visit, hopefully, today or tomorrow. I haven't seen them in a while. I mean, other than just visiting them at their mother's house. And it's really been hard on me because I'm trying to direct them in the right direction. So what would you say maybe, like, would be the best way for me to maybe just be a better example to say, you know, they've already been caught up in this thing, and I'm trying to like direct them in the right way. My son is in video games. My daughters have been on the internet. I have no idea what they know or what.
Sure.
But I can see the effects of what's going on, and it's really disturbing me because I can't just grab a hold of it and shake it out of them. You know, it's like I gotta sit here and be a better example of loving them and showing them that I used to be that way, but now that God has changed me, and I want to be different than that. You know.
Yeah, that's a great question. The question is, I've got three teenagers who, in their home environment, I assume with their mom, are allowed to access this content. They have their own devices. They're coming over to my house. How do I manage this? You know, what do I do? I don't have a pat answer for you on that. I think it is important to be prayerful. It is right that you have a heart that you don't want in your home to just facilitate that all the time. I think it's worth having some conversations with them. I don't know what that relationship looks like. If they, if they're inclined to hear you out or brush you off or whatever, you could make a request that, hey, I know that, in your other home environment or other context, you're allowed to do this, but you could make a request that out of just respect for me and how I want us to spend our time together, I'm asking you to not access or utilize those things. You could ask, you could shut down your home internet thing, but if it's a cell phone, most of them are still going to be able to. So these are real world challenges, right? That many of us deal with. Like our kids, it's not like we just have them in our little cocoon. We have to, and some of us have complicated family arrangements that even make this more of a challenge. So I don't have easy answers, but I would say it's worth prayerfully asking for God's help, and it's worth the discomfort of engaging in that conversation with your kids, as opposed to like, I feel helpless here, so I'm not going to touch it. It's just the stakes are way too high to ignore it. So yeah, thanks for the question. Okay, so a couple others here that I want to touch on. Content accountability apps. So these are primarily applications that are utilized to not allow pornographic content to be accessed by a particular user. Typically, they're going to be they'll apply to phones, computers, whatever devices a person uses. And what characterizes these software apps is that they are, once they are installed, they are hard to circumvent. They're not iron tight, but it's difficult to just uninstall these applications. And yeah, typically they involve you having an accountability partner that's getting notices and reports of websites that you're visiting, if any of those websites have been flagged as being inappropriate or not. And I know some of you wrote in and indicated that you have utilized these or know others who have utilized these. And so that's something to think about, do you have an iron-tight mechanism or as close to an iron-tight mechanism in place to ensure that you're not accessing these inappropriate sites? And are you in conversation with others who are helping you accomplish that? And I've listed three there. There are numerous applications, but these can be really helpful. I know a number of people that have used them well. There are times when, I've gotten a request from someone that I'm working with, and they're saying, I'm just trying to download this character icon for this video game, and it's not letting me do it because the whole video game domain is flagged. Can you help me do that? Can you help me make an exception to that, right? And so there can be times when you have a legitimate desire to connect on a website, and it's saying, nope, not going to let you do that because it knows that somewhere in that domain or in that realm there is inappropriate content. And so then you have to say, okay, could you do that as a single instance? There have been times when I said, okay, well, I'm not going to go to all the trouble of excluding that in the code of the program, but I'll just go to that website. I'll grab that GIF or whatever, that image thing that's, character, cartoon or whatever, and email it to you, kind of thing. So, but you can run into that with some of these apps. And then just a couple of others quickly. So add content blockers. I use ad block. I have it installed as an ad blocker in Google. I have the browser for ad block installed on my Kindle. I use that. With less success than in times past, these now just aren't as good, I find, as they once were. The browsers and companies serving up ads are more savvy and making it more difficult for these to make. I did get a note from, is Brian here this morning? Can't see. Not that Brian, another Brian. Anyway, can't remember his last name. But he indicated that, and he's a software engineer, and he indicated that uBlock Origin is the best ad blocker out there. It's open source, it's free, and so you might want to take a look at that. I'm going to be looking for something better for two reasons. One, what I currently have now, most video feeds like a weather forecast or a news story or whatever has some kind of ad on there, and my ad block software keeps the video from playing because the first 3 or 5 or 15 seconds of that is some kind of a commercial. And so I have to mechanically go through every time to disable that if I want to see that, and so that can get cumbersome. So I'm looking for some better options there. But they do serve a purpose in that all the sidebars as they're getting filled up often, you know, in my world, because they know that I'm a 55-year-old man, they're serving up the immodest pictures and all the stuff wanting to get you to look and click, right? So it's nice to have that stuff stripped out, at least a majority of it. It's worth it. The cumbersomeness of the software I use is worth not having that thrown at me. But it's not iron tight. You know, that stuff still comes in. And if you go to Time or Newsweek or CNN, there a lot of their subordinate articles that they're saying, you might be interested in this. A lot of the pictures they're serving up are there with, you know, immodestly dressed women or something that's intended to hook you in to that, right? So even if it's not an ad, it's there, and all that's not going to get stripped out. And then just some miscellaneous things I wanted to mention. And these aren't necessarily, you know, like software platforms, but do you have good book reading lists for your kids? There is a ton of stuff you can get online. I've provided some links there. Are you looking at instead of just what am I going to entertain myself with a screen, you know, or my kids, can I put some good quality books in front of them? Can I read a book with them? Do I have good books? My wife and I have been reading a book series. I believe it's called The Zion Chronicles. It's a series. It's a World War II Nazi setting. We find that interesting. We have been listening to The Lord of the Rings. Got a deal with Audible. Andy Serkis reads through all of those. Does a great job with all the voices. So, you know, we've been doing that as opposed to watching movies and other things more commonly. Do you have an open book computer policy? And what I mean by that is, does your spouse or some significant other in your life have total open freedom to look at what's going on your laptop or your phone without you getting defensive about it, right? So, so my wife knows, has all of my passwords, and she can get on my laptop on my phone, and she can see it there, and I'm grateful for that. Now, she's not always snooping around, and we have a high level of trust there, but I want her to feel like she can do that and not feel like she's implying that I'm a bad pervert guy or something, but because she loves me. And I want to have an open book policy on what's happening on my laptop and my phone. So if you don't have that, then you should ask why. And how can you cultivate something that will allow that to happen. Now, I have confidential stuff related to my chamber work. I work at the Chamber of Commerce, and I'm an elder here at the pastor, right? I'm an elder here at the church. So some of my pastoral-related documents, you know, those are confidential. And she's not going to go looking there. But she can see my internet activity. She can see who I've been calling. You know, that's you know, what's in my photo gallery. All of that, it's like, yeah, have at it. So I want to encourage you, think about that. What have you established within your home as a means of being open and transparent? Are you willing to let yourself be in a place where others can look in and see what's going on? It might also be worth noting that all the primary web browsers, Microsoft Edge, Google, Chrome, Safari, these are all engineered to track your activity and therefore know exactly what you're doing and what you're going to like and serve up ads. And so my understanding is that the only one that isn't like that is Mozilla Firefox. So if you want one that's not really geared toward tracking and serving you up ads, then you might consider that as a platform for your internet connectivity and web browsing. Yeah.
Another great browser that doesn't track you is called Brave.
Okay.
It's the one I use at home and at work.
Great.
It's a great browser.
Okay. So, and I assume it would be what, at brave.com?
I don't know. Just okay. Search for the Brave browser.
All right. So there's another browser that's not going to track or serve up ads, and it's called Brave. So you could do a web search and look up that. Thanks, Eric. Just want to encourage you to also think about being in some kind of an accountability group. Do you have men or women in your life that are asking you the hard questions? Hey, how are things going with your thought life? You know, what content are you consuming online, and is it honoring God? How can we work together? How can we pray for one another to pursue holiness in this regard? If you don't have that, I just want to say, you know, whatever it costs, get yourself in a place where there are other people in your life that love you and are going to be willing to talk with you, encourage you, and pray with you so that we can honor God in that. All right, I'm going to close with this final thought. The thing about tools are only useful if you know where to find them, right? How many of you have had a job you needed to do and you couldn't find that tool because it's buried in some box in your shed somewhere and you just, oh, I know I've got that. Okay, so you got to know how to find them. If you know how to use them, right? So some of this stuff I'm sure is intimidating. It's worth figuring out how to use them. Get some help because they're not going to do you any good if they're just there, but you're not employing them. You're not using them. But finally, and I think this is probably most important for most of us, is tools are useless unless you have a plan to use them. Right? Do you have a plan that you're going to implement? You're going to use some of these tools to accomplish the purpose that we are endeavoring here, which is to make God-honoring entertainment choices. Right? You can have all the links in the world, right? And you can even be familiar a little bit with how they work, but if you don't have a plan for how they're going to be involved in helping you make God-honoring entertainment choices, they're just tools sitting in a toolbox, not doing anybody any good. And so I want to encourage you, there are lots of tools. Let's use them. And let's ask God to help us with our God entertainment choices. So Ephesians 5, 15, 17, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. I know we're late. Thanks for being patient with me. I'm going to pray for us and get us out. Lord, thank you for our time together. I'm so grateful that we've been able to spend these weeks together. God, I pray you'd use it to cause us to walk the high road now in our entertainment choices, and that you'd use us to be an encouragement to others as we pursue that. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.